For February 19th, 2016, we talk about the PlayStation VR release leak, Firewatch, and we ask you about your favorite video game romances. Welcome to Level 139. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And boy, I do not have like a billboard thing to bring up at the start.
That's we're going to do the thing. We're the thing.
Yeah, we're like, the thing.
This is not the episode. I'm calling it right now. This is going to be the most anti-new listener episode that we've ever done. It's going to be all in jokes. It's all going to be backward references. No billboarding.
Video games should factor in somehow.
That's right.
We're taking it back. I would have thought we would have looped after 150, but we're doing it. 139. There we go. 139 is number one.
Uh-huh.
139 equals one.
Yay! Mod 138. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Oh wow. Huh. Yeah, that is an early runner for a title, Mod 138. Oh, because that's a good joke. That was good. It's almost like you do math or something.
That's what they say at work too.
Do they bully you at work, Ben?
Yeah, bunch of programmers.
Oh, yeah. They just give you I was about to say knuckle sandwiches. What I mean is noogies. Why don't we call noogies knuckle sandwiches, guys?
I don't know. It would fit.
It's like what is like boxing a open square? Face?
An open face knuckle sandwich.
Oh my god,
Ben, you're on a roll, man.
Yeah, somebody give this guy a glass of water because he is parched.
Speaking of which, I need to open up my beer, but
open it loud into the mic.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll get there.
Okay. I say that thinking that it's going to be like a Flophouse Coors Pop. You know, it's like psh, like you're opening a can of beer, but no, you're probably a classy gentleman. You have a bottle. Okay, there we go. Oh, that was good. I could sample that and put it on Freesound, along with all the bullshit around it. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, does anybody have an anecdote they want to begin with, or should we just like kind of get right to the main entree?
Let's do this thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dennis decided for us. Thank you. I always love it when somebody else takes the burden of responsibility away from
making a decision. This is the non-friendly to new people episode, so we're not going to give them any time to get to know us. It's going to be all business.
No, go listen to another show on the network this week. I'm not going to say like go away entirely. what I'm saying is this is a 201 course. You know, you have to clap into it.
Yeah, you got to really, really want it here. So you need to be experienced or talented.
Yeah.
To be in this episode.
Can't be both. You know what? I don't want any experts in here. Got to have some beginner's mind. Okay. So we've got the usual kind of show for you, minus the billboarding, with the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And if you haven't listened to the show, fuck you. I'm not going to explain what those cute names are. I decided on them 3 years ago, and they mean regular video game podcast things, such as
the brief,
where we talk about. Nope. No. Does anybody have a story they want to volunteer?
Oh,
it feels so special. I know, right? We didn't think about the consequence, did we? We didn't think about. Does anybody have a story?
Man.
Are these even stories?
Somebody
just drop some science.
All right. So, To Ash, which you guys interviewed Kyle Ballantyne for that, To Ash is now available to purchase direct from the dev for $5. There is also a free demo available if you want to give it a test drive. Just to let people know a little bit more, I was commissioned to do character portraiture, so some of the artwork is already in the game, namely the main character portraits, but there will be additional artwork added later on for NPCs, title logo, probably an illustration or two from the story points. It's also up on Steam Greenlight, so go ahead and go there and vote for it, so that way we can get it on Steam. And Additionally, I wanted to let people know, anybody who is not interested in JRPGs, this is one of them. However, Kyle also made a second game mode for people who aren't really big fans of that genre, where you can basically skip all the battles and just get the story content. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like JRPGs or are burned out of them or what have you, there is a story-only mode, so you can go and just, you know, partake of the story without having to play all the battles and everything. So, cool stuff. And so, you know, like, definitely vote for it on Steam Greenlight, and, you know, stay tuned. There will be some more patches with some more stuff as soon as I get time to do it.
Yeah, this is, I'm so excited, because shout out to the Patreon. Jala has been posting a lot of this character art in the Slack, and it is just phenomenal, and it's made me so excited to play this game. So,
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to work on it with Kyle. He's a really cool guy. And, you know, the game, from the part of it I played, I haven't had time. Doing the art takes precedence over playing the game, unfortunately. But, you know, so, like, I've played some of it. I have not played all of it yet, but that will happen after I have time to relax a little bit to do that. So,
yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's good. If you listen to that episode and you're curious about it, I'm probably going to go over there and check it out, but also, you know, check it out on Steam Greenlight and, you know, watch the videos and things like that too.
Yeah. Get this thing in as many places as possible.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What else do we have here? I'm going to take us over to, this is kind of the obvious story for me to talk about, Dark Souls 3. There were some recent announcements. I'm mostly media blackout on this still. And this is, kind of still the case. Does knowing that there's going to be DLC, does that spoil anything?
No, I would be incredibly, it would be a spoiler if there was not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it would be kind of a surprise. So.
Well, no, I mean, it spoils that, that Namco Bandai is nothing but cash grab and money runners. I don't know what that means. Money runners. That is a new kind of game. Good.
These days, isn't it kind of like, if you have a big game and you don't release DLC, people are like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why aren't you giving us more content? So, I mean, pretty much it seems that way for a lot of games. So,
Jala, people gonna holla, you know? It's just like they're gonna yell no matter what. I was just making fun of people who called the Scholar of the First Sin stuff a cash grab. Like, universally, from releases, like, their best content is their DLC. But no, they announced a season pass. It's on pre-sale, which I don't know, kind of I'm not crazy about pre-ordering a season pass, but it's there if you want to save some money.
How much is it?
I don't know. It's like, it's going to be like $20-$25.
Blood dollars.
Yeah, no, like, there's a deluxe edition available on PSN, but that's $80 as opposed to $60. So yeah, it's going to be like $20-$25. I'm not seeing an actual cost right now for the thing itself.
Here's another question. Are they going to have any extra content for doing pre-orders? Sometimes they do offer, like, some kind of fancy dongle.
I don't know if there's a dingus on offer, but I know that if you get the deluxe edition, you get like a theme and like soundtrack, something like that. But I think that maybe pre-ordering it just gets you a lower price.
Have been pre-order bonuses for the previous games? Has there been in-game items?
There have been... yes, there have been retailer specific ones. So there was a whole set of, like, mid tier level weapons that would break the early portion of Dark Souls 2.
Well, it was all stuff that you could get later in the game, though, right?
Yes, it was not something that was exclusive. It was like early access. Okay. And I got that just for having the regular, like, the Steam edition of it. So I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, but it's two full DLC packs that have, quote, new maps, bosses, enemies, and additional weapon or armor sets. So this is not some, like, Arkham mission pack level bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just me, but I find it really hard to get excited about anything like that when I haven't even tried the original game content. Like, I guess I don't blame them at all for having DLC. Like Jala said, it's to be expected at this point, so that's fine. It feels weird to me to talk about it now,
mm-hmm.
when you can get so much, you know, hype, for lack of a better word, out of the base game. Like, there's, I just want to, you know, feast my eyes on the base game. I want to be excited for that. Mm-hmm. And it feels like they are just kind of getting way ahead of themselves by going to the DLC already. It's like you don't have anything else from the base game that you can talk about. Not just give me a character skin or something.
But then people would cry about spoilers.
That's true. This right? it is. We established it is a very safe announcement.
Yeah, and also, very safe. Also, if they waited until after launch, people would say, "Oh, why isn't there a deluxe edition where I can just buy it and, you know, get that?" Like, I think they're doing what's going to get them the least amount of heat, but they're doing it by playing into kind of a weird thing that a bunch of publishers do, which is like the pre-order of the season pass stuff.
You need you don't announce the DLC until after. Mm-hmm. But then you price it and then say the deluxe edition at launch would have costed this. And mm-hmm. you just make that a couple dollars more than you're charging for the DLC. And everyone feels like they're getting a great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So we should all go around and give our biggest non-announcements about Dark Souls. The biggest things that they can announce right now that are not actually spoilers.
If anybody says it's going to be hard, I'll drop you from the call.
Maybe we shouldn't play this game. Maybe I should back away.
It's compatible with two joysticks.
Wait, like MIDI joysticks, like you would play X-Wing with?
No, just the two joysticks that come with like the PS4 controller.
Okay.
I'm going to say it is also compatible with two joysticks, like the MIDI joysticks.
Okay. All right. that would be surprising, actually. So it goes against this. I don't know if I like this game, Dennis.
It's the least challenging, you know, like the guy beat it with the Guitar Hero controller and then all that. So this is giving him just two, like, over an embarrassment of riches. It's going to be playable with the, Armored Core?
Battalion.
Yeah. Yes. Excuse me. Steel Battalion.
I was going to say Armored Core is a From Software game. Yeah.
Well, they need to invent some ridiculously elaborate control panel and then make Dark Souls playable on it.
True. It is like just control individual joints. It'll be like Quap. Quap Souls. Jala, how about you?
It's going to be on Oculus.
You know what? I would actually prefer to play Oculus games that are third person. Mm. Yeah. Don't give me that first person stuff to make me sick. Although there's a lot of camera spinning in Dark Souls. I'm going to say at least one of the bosses or areas is going to be named in such a way that I will call the name evocative on an episode of Bonfire Side Chat.
Now that's a prediction you can control, though, right?
I can just make it happen, which is self-fulfilling
prophecy. Self-fulfilling prophecy doesn't count, Cole.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what makes it safe.
Yeah, the game will be like such complete horseshit. It sucks from beginning to end. You're like, I've got to find one thing in here to call evocative. I've got to find one thing.
The game being good and something being evocative, that's not mutually exclusive.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's true.
Dark Souls 1 is backward compatible on Xbox One for people who have that or care.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Demon's Souls for a second. I was about to lose my mind. Dark Souls one, not Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, no, I would love it if I would love it if they brought Demon's Souls to like modern systems.
No, that would be huge. Would be awesome. And that's why I was like my jaw was on the floor for a second. Don't do that to me, Cole.
Sorry. Oh man. Let's see. Dennis, how about you? You got a story?
I do. A little bit of a whoopsie daisy on the part of the CEO of GameStop. He let slip when PlayStation VR will start shipping, and it is this fall. And he quickly kind of walked it back and, you know, did the typical, we're actually not sure. But he stated pretty clearly that it's going to be this fall in an interview. The bigger thing, though, is that, like, the Oculus Rift is going to start shipping March 28th, and that's crazy close. Like, for how long Oculus and VR and all this crap has been in the hype hopper. Mm-hmm. I never thought the day would actually be upon us, and now it's like a month out. So that's just.
Just to totally take this in a completely unrelated direction, when you said Oculus Lift, I was just thinking about it in terms of like Uber. Wow, and my brain went somewhere else, and I didn't even pay attention to the rest of what you were saying.
It'll take you anywhere.
Oculus lip.
They virtually take you places.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They come to the bar, they put one of the headsets on you, they simulate the drive home, and then you throw up. And then once you're emptied out from the motion sickness, then the actual lift comes.
Yeah, save a lot of money on car cleanup.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, this is all, you know, coming in the next couple of months here, and it's just it's weird. Just that we're in an age where we have so much information on these things and so many demos. And so, like, it's just been such a thing for so long that it's really weird that this is, like, going to be out.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I will say, though, just to continue, because the story was originally about the PlayStation VR. My prediction, not related to Dark Souls, but also out of my control, is that PlayStation VR is actually going to get a lot more traction than the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, now you're talking crazy.
Yeah, I think having we all know the PlayStation 4 has been, you know, really incredibly successful with this generation of consoles. So it's just got a massive presence, and I think having that kind of branded support or console dedicated support behind it, the Oculus might be kind of a scary, oh, I got to buy this piece of hardware and then go find all the stuff that works with it. And, you know, it's basically the same reasons that someone would prefer a console over PC are going to be the reasons that people prefer a PlayStation VR over an Oculus Rift.
I think I smell toast. Whoa, I couldn't disagree with you more.
Oh, no, there's a so throwdown.
Walk me through your thinking then.
Oh, I don't know if I would want to
send PlayStation Move.
Yeah, for like PlayStation Move or any of the 3D support.
But there was as crappy as PlayStation Move was, I don't know that there was really any comparison or any analog on PC.
There's a beeping in the background. Is that for real?
Sorry. I'll fix that in one second.
No, it's fine. No, you bringing up console lock in as a plus. I think that like at this level, at this price point, you need to really court the enthusiasts. Like, you need to get this on as many PCs as possible. Like, you know, get as many perverts out there. I want to be sex positive. Get as many pornography enthusiasts out there to get an Oculus specifically for, you know, putting
Whoa. Women can be perverts too, Cole.
Oh, okay.
Case in point, like, I've got something to say later on during the grind that will make that very evident. Go on.
Okie dokie.
Topical.
No. I really think that, like, at this stage in the technology, like, Oculus needs to be on PC where there is as little lock-in as possible. Like, I think that there's going to be far more content for it after, you know, just a year after launch, there's going to be far more content for it on the Oculus than there is on the PlayStation 4. I don't know if it's going to be better content, but, like, that's going to draw more people. More, you know, more content and more options are going to draw more people willing to invest the money in it. And, like the PlayStation VR is just going to be this weird little walled garden, to my estimation.
Can I throw out a third opinion?
Oh, no.
It'll all be garbage.
Well, like the Google Cardboard, where you can just use your phone to simulate VR. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a totally viable option because most people have phones, you know, and so it doesn't cost extra money and it's using something that you already have.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've never used it. Yeah. I don't know. It's all weird to me, but like your instinct on this, Dennis, runs counter to mine.
We'll see. The reason, just to give one more qualifier, one, just because it's, you know, uh-huh, console lock-in or what, you know, whatever name you want to call that. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say is I think Sony will invest very heavily. It might be the what's the mech suit fighting game that they're putting out for a VR headset?
Oh, that, like, battle blocks or battle bots.
Yeah, it's like a battle bots
game. Yeah.
I forget what it's called, but anyway, I think that they are going to make a very dedicated push for an esports style VR game, right?
Yeah.
And I think that will give you a solidified, like, hey, this is the bet. This is the thing that's going to get a crowd behind it. And if they do that successfully, I don't think that there is any analog for that on PC. And that's where I think they'll be able to make a move and be bigger. But we shall see.
Yeah, I think we will. Yeah, I don't know. That is a very audacious claim. I'm not going to try and get the last word in.
Sounds good.
All right, never mind.
No. I realize I just did.
That is the hardest thing though, is like when you're having the conversation.
Well, how do you stop it without
exactly? You're like, okay, I need to acknowledge that I'm not trying to say the last thing, but I also like I'm talking right now, so
yeah, I get to be like, hey Ben, how you got a story?
I do got a story.
Okay, cool.
Hey.
And all right, so my story is that Tomb Raider won the Writers Guild Award for best writing in a video game.
Hmm. Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Yes, correct. And so I was looking up, apparently the year before, Last of Us got it for best writing, so it seems like a pretty legitimate award. But, so I thought that was interesting. It beat out two other games. It beat out Pillars of Autumn, which I have not played, or Pillars of Eternity, excuse me.
Yeah, that's the new Baldur's Gate-alike.
Yeah, not the Cosmic Picture. And, then it also beat out The Witcher 3 and Assassin's Creed, which that's fine. Because like, even though The Witcher is really good, I could see another game having a more compelling narrative, perhaps, end to end. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just thought that was interesting. That makes me excited to play it whenever it comes out for PC or PS4.
Oh, it's already out.
Is it?
Yeah, it came out on PC like here really recently. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But not on PS4?
Not that I know of.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, that's you're waiting on PS4 for a bit. It was one of those timed exclusive bullshit things.
Yeah.
Okay. But check cool. and see if your PC can run it. Like the previous one was really, really effectively optimized.
Why would you bring up a PC being able to or not being able to run things?
I'm not specifically trying to like make you angry.
You can't. You just let's draw a wide circle around that topic just in its entirety.
Cool. Are we going to have beef now? Like, are you going to do this every time I say something?
No, it's not you. It's not. You could not have known. I'm just going to put it out there now. I need at least a month of not talking about system requirements.
Okay.
it's good.
Is that why you're so full of piss and vinegar tonight, Dennis?
Yeah, it is. It is totally why.
He's watching XCOM Let's Plays and just furiously crying.
No, I refuse. I will not. I engage with that game one little bit, and I'm close to going back to Enemy Within. Like, I've got a run that I'm partway through on that, and I want to go back to it. I just need some space. In fact, I don't even know if I'm really comfortable recording on this Mac, this piece of crap machine that can't run anything. So maybe I need to hop out. No,
we should do tandem XCOM too, where somebody can play it and then you can watch it on Steam, but then issue the commands.
Hmm. Commander and whatever is above Commander.
you should put a link out on like on. I'm on Craigslist to see if you can find an XCOM surrogate.
Yeah, an XCOM surrogate. Just hire yourself out as a...
Oh my gosh.
You could probably do that on Slack with somebody who has the game, because you can broadcast, you know, from your PC to somebody else. So, you know, you could totally do that on Steam with somebody from the listenership.
Or no,
and then maybe they would calm you the hell down, Dennis.
Well, that would be a lot of time with one person though. they would just have to sit there for the, you know, tens of minutes that I'm just thinking.
No, so here's what I'm saying. You don't take full responsibility for a run, right? Like you're not in it for, you know, for the long haul from beginning to end. What you do is you take your unsullied perspective, right? And you hire yourself out as an ex-consultant.
An ex-consultant?
Yes.
An ex-consultant.
Yes. And so, exactly. So when somebody gets stuck or they want to know what's up, you know, they pay a nominal fee and then you let them know what's up. Like they send you screenshots, they let you, they pipe you in and you say, hey, based on all the factors here, you know, and then you make the call. Yeah.
Having not played the game myself, but having thought about what it would be like to play the game a whole lot.
You've run the scenarios. I think you're ready for this.
Right. I've reached that level of XCOM clairvoyance where I don't need to play the game. I am in touch with the soul of XCOM.
Untold numbers of XCOM sequels have already been created in your head.
Yes, I've played them all. I can actually say that XCOM 2 was in the top 25% of how those games could have gone. But the 3 and 4, I think, will just surpass it even again. So.
Yeah, no. And if Firaxis wants to figure out how they can get that to the 10 or 5, you know, they've got your number.
Yeah, yeah. Really, they should be paying me to play the game. So if you guys, I know you're listening, can just send me a PC that will run the damn thing, we'll be square. I'm done talking about this.
And we're done.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for multiplayer. Dennis.
Yes.
I can't say what it is.
I'm going to read the question here as soon as I navigate to Facebook and bring it
that,
up.
That's way too much information, actually.
Oh, damn it. All right.
Seriously.
Yeah, we don't want to explain anything.
Are we even giving them the... Or should they just
I don't know if we should have explained it.
You guys know.
I have nobody say that word anymore. Dennis, just read the sentence and we will go into it.
Sorry. So sorry. Can we ask things still?
Ben,
but not identify.
So bad at this game. You're breaking so many rules that you don't even understand. And
I need to go get a drink.
Okay. All right. Go get a drink.
No, I'll be fine.
Okay.
I'll troop on.
All right. Dennis, go ahead and read.
With a Valentine's Day just behind us, we want to know what your favorite romance quests/systems are.
Okay, and I will pick up with Chase, who says, Harvest Moon 64 was my first introduction into gamified relationships. In hindsight, it's pretty basic, but 11-year-old me was pretty impressed with how involved each of the storylines could get.
I'm Harvest Moon is a complete blind spot for me.
It was mentioned multiple times by some of the listeners, actually.
Yeah, people dig on it. It is basic. It is kind of the like even Dragon Age like does the same thing, which is find whatever the person likes and give enough of them to this person until you earn enough P points.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
technical term.
Yeah, technical term. I played SNES, like the SNES Harvest Moon, and it very much is. I kind of wonder, like, how much like dating sims or things like this, Harvest Moon, have contributed to the idea that, well, if I just do enough nice things for a person, they owe me sex.
Yeah,
not to turn it into my usual thing here, but
yeah. Well, it's what I would say is the type of, well, and wow, I'm probably gonna get mail about this, which by which I mean Cole will get mail about this, but the type of person who really wants to play like the hardcore dating sim, that's what it's all about game, is probably also the type of person who wants to be able to control it, because mm-hmm. nothing would feel worse than playing that and then finding out you're not only incompetent at real life dating, but you're incompetent at this game about dating as well. Yeah. So my guess is that the systems in those kinds of games are probably relatively basic.
Yeah, and to put it more generously, let me know if I'm wrong here, but I think to put it in a way that probably casts that person in a more kind light would be that games are empowerment fantasies, right? Most of the time.
Why would you
want to enter into that situation to feel bad about yourself, especially because it is something that so clearly reflects on a pretty large portion of human experience? You don't want to feel bad about yourself, you know?
Cole the diplomat today. I like that. Well said.
Yeah. Jala, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, Planescape Torment. I remember playing through the ones with Anna and Fall from Grace at different times, of course. Not really quests, just dialogue trees. But they, like the rest of the game, were so well written. Yep.
Yep. So we just have a rotating cast of games that people mention. Yeah, pretty good. I forget Anna, but I remember Falls from Grace, and Falls from Grace is really good.
Hilarious, because I when I played through, I ended up like being coupley with Anna rather than Falls from Grace. So
is Anna the tiefling?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. And Falls from Grace is the half angel who runs the brothel. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Ben, what does Glenn say?
Glenn says, I like the quest to get the couple's mask and Majora's mask. It was as cute as it was frustrating to get everything done in just that 72-hour cycle.
Yeah, I forget about that. I stalled out on the 3DS version of that game, but I remember liking that quest.
The whole game is a 72-hour cycle, right?
Yeah, but
you can reset
Groundhog Days. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So you got to do it all in 172 hour before it's over.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
And from what I remember, not all of them are like that. I think that that one in particular is one where it has to be on that same cycle.
Huh.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Kilo say?
Kilo says the almost romance with Alcade in .hack and G.U. Am I saying that right?
.hack.hack.gu, I think. Is
.hack.gu, yeah, why not? It was really affecting one for me. But on subsequent playthroughs, it was mediocre. I was just in that high school love phase, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder how many of these, if people went back to them, they would feel...
Yeah. Like, oh, wow, that was pretty lame-o, but you know, at the time, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, there's also something, though, about having been through it once before that I think
that's
takes
the thing.
A lot of the edge off of this sort of thing.
Yeah, you don't get that.
It might not be a faction of the writing or anything like that. It's probably more related to just having gone through it once before.
Yeah. Those are like those specifically, if I remember right, I can't speak to the GU, although I assume GU stands for Guild. Those were PS2 RPGs that mimicked MMORPGs.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yep. but they were specifically like very anime JRPGs, but all the characters and stuff were other people playing.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious how that, like, how they work that wrinkle in that it's not just, you know, an elf lady who likes you, but another person on the other side of that screen. At least in the fiction. Nathan writes in saying, Fire Emblem Awakening was pretty interesting because it turned what would be boring anime romance sequences into what amounts to a super soldier breeding program a la Pokemon. There's a spoiler in the next sentence, which I'm going to leave that out just in case somebody cares, because that is a very beloved game if it's the 3DS one. Yeah, no, that's pretty good. there isn't something similar in a Massive Chalice, right? Like that recent strategy game that Double Fine did.
I didn't play it yet.
Yeah, people seem to like it.
Yep, that's a thing.
Yeah,
apparently, no one on the podcast.
Well, it's just, I'm not
we
that
didn't say which people.
I'm not that crazy about Double Fine's non-retro stuff. Let's see, Jala. What does Carlo say?
Carlo says, Persona 4 Golden really gave me the high school feeling of keeping an eye out for the girl you liked and hanging out casually. Hashtag GA is best girl.
I'll believe you. Man, I really want to play Persona 4 Golden. I've had it on my...
Yeah, I've had my eye on that for a while.
I picked it up for 10 bucks like over the holidays.
So the one PlayStation Plus game that I like neglected to download in the month that it was available was Persona 3.
Oh, wow.
And I was so mad because I'm really intrigued by that series.
Yeah.
And it's a really high quality game and just, you know, I missed the window and I was like, the one time, of course, I couldn't have missed like Doug's Big Adventure or Retro Ball
PS
or whatever.
Vita Doug game. Patty's Revenge.
Oh, it's Woe Dave. The game's name is Woe Dave.
Okay. I was about to say, at the mountains of Skeeter. the secret word to open the fell Eldritch Gate is honk honk.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
There has to have been a Doug video game, right?
Oh yeah, we did one. We covered it for Abject Suffering. There was one on Game Boy Color.
Yeah, it was actually called Doug's Big Game, so I wasn't that far off.
But it was based on the Disney Doug, you know, and that's not canon. But no, there's a person whose opinion on these things I really respect, Riff from the Video Games Hot Dog Podcast, and he says that Persona 3 is like a dry practice run for Persona 4, that like it is, like Persona 4 just has better, more engaging characters. I've heard good things about both. But yeah, I trust his opinion on that.
Sure.
Which is why I'm a little bit more like gun shy. Like if we end up doing a Persona game for WoW, it'll probably be 4. Mostly because we can play it on Vitas.
Oh yeah. How long has 4 been out?
Oh, forever. Like that was
2008.
Yep, PS2 game in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow. Okay.
Very late PS2 game. Let us see here. Who do we have? That was Jala Ben. What does Roop say?
Roop says, the dating in Killer is Dead is just the worst. But on a serious note, I have always loved the subtle relationships that Jane Jensen had in her games. Gabe and Grace and Gabriel Knight, and a possible crush with Malachi and David and Mobius.
Never played Mobius. Definitely Gabe and Grace are pretty good. even in two, but then it becomes just funny.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, like, a game writer or a game creator as the driving force behind what makes the romance relationships good.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
I mean that those are probably more dependent on writing than any other system, right? So
I think so, yeah, or at least their ability to convey genuine human things.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Brandon say?
Brandon's, he waxes poetic. This is sweet. He says, I fell in true love with my demon's great axe in Dark Souls. While everyone else attended the gala ball in Anne Orlando, I spent all my time down in the depths polishing my axe. Even the great club in DS2 couldn't replace my beloved Choppy. it's sweet. That's just, it warms my heart.
Yeah, no, that's true devotion. Polishing it, isn't that like that? That's the really rough hewn one from the Bed of Chaos or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or Lost Izalith. Sorry,
just the slammy one.
Yeah, the one that's kind of just a hammer. So
that one got axe in name only.
That one got three thumbs.
The what?
No. Oh, the like sorry. That response got three thumbs.
Gotcha. I was like, I totally missed the thumb system in Dark Souls.
You can chop off thumbs?
Yeah, no, you turn them in for a bounty.
Well, also the Majora's Mask one also got a bunch of thumbs, too, if you want to talk about
it. Well, that was just...
Gotta give props to Glenn.
I don't want to make a practice of talking about how many thumbs things got. Brandon's just went up one thumb. Here we go. No, but it's just funny. He broke the rules, but it was popular, so I guess we're going to allow it. Mm-hmm. let's see here. Mike writes in saying, because I'm the worst, I like my romance complicated and sad. Show me a doomed or star-crossed relationship, and I'm all in. Without getting into spoilers, I really enjoyed how Steins Gate juxtaposes romance and time travel. Can you move heaven and earth to save someone you love? And if you do... Can you live with what it cost you? Or as you Groundhog Day yourself over and over, do you discover that you love someone else? Someone who doesn't remember the time you spent together? A phantom relationship? Overall, romance and love is hard work, and any game that treats it as such gets a gold star from me.
Yeah, I really like the idea, because I've never seen it before, of, the time travel, got to go back and fix the one thing obsession, gradually making you realize that it was something else that you wanted the entire time. That's really intriguing.
That's also the entire premise of Braid.
Very fair.
Yeah. Also, I believe there's a pretty cool text game called Save the Date that I've heard a lot about that does something really similar, which is there's a date that ends with the entire world being destroyed. And you have to go back and relive it and try and figure out how it works. And if I'm remembering that incorrectly, please forgive me.
Well, there was also, I had said a news story a while back about a game that was all dedicated to like 5 minutes of your life right before you get killed over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like that's something that's actually out there a bit.
It's like Futurama.
Oh, that episode's super sad.
Oh, yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. Let's see here. Jala, what does Ollie say?
Hi, Ollie. Ollie says, I don't know about best, but the one I had the least fun doing was GTA 4. It felt like 70% of the game was keeping girlfriends or cousins happy by repeating the same little mini mission and choices over and over again. I believe that is why it is the least fondly remembered of the Grand Theft Auto games. A huge misstep in an otherwise enjoyable game.
Yeah, I mean,
so
good.
I'd be curious to hear what he thinks about Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, because that had similar elements that did, where it just painted relationship as a completely as a game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't
know. Was it as like intrusive to where they would call you and demand to hang out?
That part may not have been as intrusive. Yeah,
yeah. Well, it was set in the early 90s, so it didn't have a cell phone. Yeah, I can't disagree. It I have enough trouble with people like trying to get hold of me in real life. Like, that's a game I suck at, so I don't need that in an actual game. Let's see here. Ben, what does Alex say?
Alex says, the one that sticks out the most in my mind would be the romance friendship system from Star Ocean 2. Star Ocean 2 is not only one of my favorite RPGs, but also one of my first. It had an interesting private action system that, among other fun activities, included the occasional opportunities to further your relationship with your party members. Loyalty mission. The game also introduced me to alternative endings, and manipulating this system led me through my many playthroughs to see them all.
Yeah.
That's cool. Isn't Star Ocean kind of a long game?
It's a JRPG.
Yeah, so that's... Well, I would like to imagine that he just went back to like a save state or a save, you know, before the things. But the idea of like playing all the way through the game multiple times trying to find all the endings is incredible if you're doing it like from the beginning each time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those games, not demand, but they elicit a lot of passion from people. So I could believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says, Dragon's Dogma doesn't even tell you there was a romance system until near the end of the game when the dragon kidnaps your lover.
Oh, I know the story.
So, gender, age, and plot significance never enter the equation. So if you don't know about this beforehand, your character will probably end up with either a child that you had to befriend for a side quest with a good reward, or the blacksmith.
I've got to go rescue blacksmith.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really good.
Yeah, I dig it. Yeah, that is a funny story. That's pretty similar to like Final Fantasy VII. There is a romance system that really only comes to play in the first disc, or comes into play in the first disc, where the person who you have the most like affection points for goes on the date with you with a gold saucer.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be either Eris, Tifa, or Yuffie. And then if you do not have any of those people with any kind of points, you get Barrett, which is fun.
Nice.
Yeah, and just like he's like, I'm no more happy about this than you are.
You'd be like, hey, I'm really happy about this.
Yeah,
so
I'm
just
to know
so
you. Like we're good friends. We've gotten a lot closer since you hired me to blow up that town, that city. Let's see.
Spoiler.
Ben, we really have to have a talk about this.
I only like calling out the ridiculous spoilers now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's funny. We do self-censor around you a lot.
The princess is in the eighth castle. Spoiler.
Oh, gosh. Let's see here. Kyle writes in saying, mine is .hackGU for sure on PS2. My roommate at the time forced me to romance the male character, and their wedding was beautiful. I'm sure it was.
Aww.
Huh, in-game weddings. I attended an EverQuest wedding. I think I crashed it.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was in Freeport. It was over in North or East Freeport, wherever paladins could go, because they were not they were not outlawed by the evil militia man leader. Yeah, no, I crashed a wedding, so I'd be curious how much they mimic the awkwardness of that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Did you buy an in-game copy of Wedding Crashers and leave it at the gift registry?
I made one.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Nice.
I wrote really all that I did was I acted it out with emotes and moving around. Yeah. Jala, what does Brian say?
Brian says, my favorite romance is actually mod added to Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 with Zan, the terminally gloomy elf. It's pretty well written, doesn't break his characterization, and has a tragic ending for people who prefer that, and a way to triumph against the odds for hopeful types. Then again, maybe it's just because I modeled the PC and Zan's interactions after my wife and my relationship.
Hmm.
Wait, he doesn't specify if you get the hopeful one or the downtrodden one.
Yeah,
there are a lot of questions.
So this is very intriguing, yeah, entry.
Yeah, this raises more questions than it answers. Did you mod this?
Huh. We'll wait for your response.
Yeah, no, we'll be here, don't worry. Ben, what does David say?
David says Harvest Moon was my first and probably favorite system. If you wanted to get a wife, you damn well had to work for it. taking potentially valuable time and resources away to steal the deal.
It, like, that was a path in that game. You could, you, like, you had to give something up to do it. And then Dennis, what does Gordon say?
Gordon says Garrosh and Chep forever, but the Kinsey romance in Saints Row 4 was incredible.
agreed
that
on both.
That was the picture for this question.
Yes, it was. It was the entirety of the Kinsey of the Kinsey boss relationship is you walk up to her and say, "Hey, Kinsey, want to fuck?" And she says, "Yeah," and then she punches you and jumps up and you kiss. No, the Garrosh one, like, that was actually because you couldn't do that until Mass Effect 3. And that was really satisfying because that is one of the few characters you would have had around from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of like, oh, you know, like, we've been through this and the world is about to end. Like, it really sold, like, the camaraderie thing. That and also, what's her name? The Quarian. Tally. The same thing with her, too. Like, any of those ones that, like, got to age along with all of the entries. Like,
Tally the one who's always behind the mask with the glowing eyes?
Yes.
Interesting.
And she takes off the mask for you, but you don't get it. You don't get to see it. It's just from behind.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was because they couldn't take off the mask. Like, doesn't that mean she'll die?
No. She explains that, like, it is. It's nothing worse than, like, a moderate allergic reaction, just because of how short the interaction was. Heyo.
Oh, Mass Effect burn. probably one of my favorite pieces of that game is when the Joker tells the joke about why are we turning around, we're only halfway there, and it's like, I got it in game. So nice. I like me some Mass Effect humor.
Pretty good. Let's see. So that is, I think that's everybody. We've reached time. Let's go through ours. I'm going to say mine real quick. I tend to, go through these because, as I think I've said in the past, like, the romance subplots are, like, a good way to get to know a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a way to get, you know, spend more time with them and get them to be, like, a little bit more vulnerable. And I realize I sound like a sociopath when I say that. Mass Effect 2 is really good for that, specifically with Jack. Because that is one of the ones where, because of the upbringing she's had and how kind of, like, hard she is, it doesn't resolve it. Like, if you have sex with her, you don't actually succeed. The way to, like, consummate that is to say, you know what, we're just going to, like, sit here and talk for a while. And I don't say that to sound like a sensitive boy or anything, but, like, wow, that really takes the... It takes the way those things normally shakes out and, you know, modifies it to be appropriate to the character. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to throw in a really honorable mention here for Firewatch. Just because that is a game, you know, in a lot of ways about two people getting to know each other.
Yeah, sure.
Mm. Yeah. Who wants to go next?
I'll throw out one.
Oh. Okay, Ben first.
I'll just throw out Knights of the Old Republic with Basta. I mean, I thought that was a good character. And since they, at that point in time, they hadn't branched out to multiple options, it seems like they were able to devote a lot of resources to specific character building because they knew kind of who you'd be after. I guess it could also be with Karth, too, was the other option.
Oh, were those the only two romance options, Basta and Karth?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yep.
You couldn't romance HK-47.
he did not take kindly to it.
Yeah. He kept on talking about my meat bags, like, I don't know. Jala, how about you?
Well, my answer is actually related to listener Michael, who didn't get read. He and I both picked the same game. We both mentioned Azure Dreams. And the reason I had to think about this question, really, but this one came to mind because there's a rival character to the main guy, and the rival... In the Japanese version, anyway, you can romance and, you know, have a relationship with. And then there's a bunch of other females in town that you can also have a relationship with. The interesting thing is Michael just said that, oh, yeah, there was a guy and you could romance him. But it was my impression that you could only actually, because I tried really hard and I never did get him to like me. And, like, because I eventually macked on everybody in the town, but, like, I couldn't get him to, like, be like, officially the guy. And I think, if I had read correctly, that they had left in all the dialogue options and stuff, so he still acts like he's, like, you know, starting to have a crush on you and stuff, but they don't ever officially allow you to, like, get with him in the English version, like the American version, but the Japanese version did. So, but anyway, it's still really bleedingly obvious that you can end up with that character, and it was interesting to me because for that time period, it was a really early PS1 game, and, you know, it was also on, like, old regular Game Boy, so, like, the romance system was in the PS1 game, though. Mm-hmm. So for that far back to have had that option, you know, even leaving the dialogue in and everything in America, you know, given the conservatism at the time, you know, is pretty cool. So.
Nice.
That's fine.
I didn't realize it was that daring.
Yep.
Nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, the most rewarding one for me was actually in Dragon Age Origins. And I didn't read any, you know, facts about what the right thing to do was or who I should chase or whatever, and just wound up going after Liliana, which is like she's like the, you know, archer lady from the convent or whatever, very innocent out in the world for the first time. But the interesting thing was I played as like a really stout dwarf guy. And I was just Googling to find out whether or not, like, I never got to the whole, like, hey, we're actually lovers now. The ending, like, conversation I got from her was like, oh yeah, let's travel the world together and go on adventures. And it was very like close friend thing, kind of like what you described with Jack. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I don't even want to call it mess something up, because that felt more true to what I had gone through with the mm-hmm. character. Cause, you know, like I said, it's like this stocky dwarf guy and this lady, and that just, you know, I think it would have felt a little weird if it ended with, yeah, now we're, you know, hookup buddies now or whatever, you know? So, but that is probably the one that I put the most time into. And even though I didn't get the official, like, quote unquote, good ending, it still felt true to the characters.
Nice.
So it was a satisfying system.
Yeah. I liked the way the Morgan romance turned out in one as well.
I think, yeah, she seemed to be kind of set up as, like, the main interest, or the ones that the writers primarily had in mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that it initially started out with, oh, I'm just going to try, you know, messing around with some other characters to see if they actually put thought into it. And it was interesting to see that they did. But what was Morgan's thing?
And in the first one, it was, like, the final choice that it came down to.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Neat. So yeah, thank you everybody for writing in. If you want to participate in this, I'm tempted.
You should already know everything.
Yeah,
right?
You should. And there's a Facebook thing. We talked about Facebook systems. That's all the information you need to know.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind. Jala.
Okay. So the first thing that I'm going to talk about is Joe Dever's Lone Wolf HD Remastered. It's based on the Lone Wolf Choose Your Own Adventure books from back in the day, which ironically, I never played those because you had to write up a character sheet and keep track of a lot of stuff, and it was just too much effort for what I was interested in putting forth when it wasn't like a full-on D&D campaign. It was a book, so I was like, eh. Whatever. So I never did play those, but I bought this on sale a while back when it was $3 or $4 and decided to start it up. And I had this impression that it was more action intense. So I was surprised to find out that it plays more like Sorcery, only with real time button taps and directional mouse swivel stuff during fight scenes and some of the non-combat action parts. Basically, if you like Sorcery, you'll like this game. There's a little bit more tooling into, you know, the different aspects of your character, and there is a leveling system and everything based on your combat, but, you know, it still plays more text-based than anything else. Anyway, I'm playing this on Steam, but it's actually a revamp of iOS games. I did not even know it was on iOS. So I would say that it plays optimally on iOS, though, because it's intended for screen taps with your finger in different places, and slashes and circles and stuff made with your finger on the touch screen.
For, like, invoking glyphs or something like that? Or
No, for like different parts of the combat, like, you know, to use the summer sword really, really, you know, hardcore and do like extra damage. You have to tap the hell out of, you know, this one particular part and fill up a bar. And, you know, to do a certain type of sword slash, you have to slash, you know, your finger, or rather in this case, the mouse, across the screen and so on. Timed, like quick time events, essentially, but geared towards having a touch screen. And here's another one of those times where me being left-handed makes it irritating for me to play that part. Mm-hmm. Because I'm left-handed, but I'm not so left-handed that I need a left-handed mouse. I have a right-handed mouse, and normally that's fine, except in this case, because I have to tap the hell out of something and then right after that swivel it around and do some other stuff. So I basically have to take both hands and put them on the mouse to play.
That sounds like a nightmare, Jala.
Yeah, it's irritating, but it's not unplayable. It's not like with the Shower with Your Dad simulator, which that one I just could not really play or get very far in because the directional pad was all on the right hand, mm-hmm. you know. So anyway, yeah, it's challenging. So like for me, it's optimal on iOS. If you are left-handed listeners and you want to play this game, I would recommend you just get it on iOS or, you know, whatever. But anyway, you can still play it. It's still okay. I was actually, when earlier I was talking about broadcasting on Steam, it was partially because listener Chris requested to watch the broadcast of my game when I was playing one day. And I was like, oh, cool. Okay. So we were chatting in Steam chat while I was going through the game, and he got introduced to it, and he actually liked it well enough that he bought it for himself and then for his brother. So this also provided a kind of couch co-op experience because, you know, you've got somebody who's commenting on it with you and watching it as you play. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed doing that because, you know, again, co-op is kind of one of my favorite things to do. Mm-hmm. So this also resulted in a bunch of in-jokes that, you know, I will tell you about just because they're funny and they also mention a little bit about the game. Mm-hmm. So one was Lone Wolf Elevator Repairman because, of course, there is an elevator which is the only entrance to a mine that you need to get into, and you have to get all these parts that are scattered around all over the town and stuff before you can do that, you know, fight dudes and whatever. And then another one is, who's your liege lord? Because Lone Wolf is a total dickwad, and he likes to remind everybody he meets that he is, after all, their liege lord. And if they fail to show deference to him, like when their whole village was raised and all of their family is kidnapped or, you know, whatever, killed, well, it must be because they're just, you know, startled by your appearance. It can't be that, you know, they've got severe trauma, you know. So he's kind of like an ass, and so it's really, really funny whenever he did that. And so it just got to the point where I was just like, who's your liege lord? And that's just, that was funny.
So are these straight adaptations of old Lone Wolf books?
They are Lone Wolf adventures, and there's four mm-hmm. of them, and, you know, like they all tie in together, like they have an ongoing storyline. So you start with one and then it goes to the next and whatever, and it like continues and progresses through all four of them. Apparently it was released as four iOS games, like separate installments, continuing much like how Sorcery was, mm-hmm. Or is, or what have you. But, you know, they released the whole collection. I don't know how it looks because it does say it's HD remastered. I don't know how the graphics compare, but
it's probably upscaled from the HD.
Well, you know,
from the iOS.
Even if they upscaled it, I have to say that Lone Wolf has a dumpy ass Gumby crotch.
What's that even mean?
Dumpy ass Gumby crotch.
Yes.
Sounds like a slur.
So he's okay. Lone Wolf's character model is designed to try to be super badass, right? Like he's got glowing white eyes and these ridiculous wispy fancy pants facial hair bits that like connect his scruff to his sort of mustache, right?
Yeah.
Like that look like slashes across his face because he's a wolf, right? Okay. But they missed a critical element. His crotch looks like Gumby. It looks like it's just flat. And like even a Ken doll has more there than the liege lord. And I'm like, okay, that's lame. And then, you know, this, when I was talking about this with Chris when we were playing the game, he was dying laughing. But then it all brought up the conversation that we had had previously while recording the level about Metal Gear Solid 5 and Quiet and Snake. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, not only that, but Lone Wolf really has a dumpy ass compared to Snake. Like, that's not, like, they didn't get any of that right. Like, no. All they did was focus on making him have glowing eyes and, you know, fancy pants, wispy, you know, facial hair, and that's it.
Yeah.
Anyway, his character model, it's okay. It's not the best. It's all right. The gameplay
what they needed to solve it is that they needed to add the crotch action lines a la Street Fighter V Hot Edition.
That needs more wolf junk.
Yeah. So
I was just reading my review for the game. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I see this on Steam.
One line.
I wanted to talk with you about this.
Right. Well, no. Like, the game does, it plays like an old Lone Wolf game, except it's got some parts where you can tell it was an iOS game that was adapted for PC. It's not intolerable to play or anything. It's fun. It just makes me laugh because Lone Wolf is such an ass. And that's about all I have to say about that. Huh. I'm about halfway through the game right now, so I still have a couple more chapters to go before I finish it up. So, any questions about that?
No, I didn't know this existed. This is Joe Dever's Lone Wolf HD Remastered.
Yes. It's a very long title, but whatever. So, and the next thing I played Besiege, which is a sandbox physics game where you build siege engines and wreck anything from small cottages to huge fortresses. And one review that I read dubbed this Kerbal Space Program for would-be psychopaths.
To be fair,
Kerbal Space Program is Kerbal Space Program for would-be psychopaths.
Yeah, like Kerbal Space Program is like Space Odyssey Part 1 or Space Oddity Part 1. Like, you just got a bunch of Major Toms up there.
Huh. Well, this is a game that's also on Steam. It's in early access mode, so they're still doing stuff to it. I mean, it's complete. It doesn't feel incomplete, but it feels like they could add more features, which is what most of the reviews were requesting. Add this feature. So I don't know how much of that'll get added in before they finally drop it out of early access mode. But anyway, you have access to parts to build anything from war tanks to flying bombers. Flying seems to be kind of tricky, like getting the stuff to work right to actually fly. But then again, I'm not very good at it so far, mostly because I need to learn more about all the different parts, because there's like a bunch of different stuff you can go through.
There's like there's a definite design vocabulary for this.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is that if you go into the Steam Workshop, I would totally recommend, even if you don't want to buy this game, go look at the Steam Workshop and look at some of the stuff that other people have made. It's crazy. Like, I would just open that up and play with their toys that they made, because that would actually be a lot of fun. But it has a lot of possibilities. It's an open game. If you make something that's too large, it can kind of slow down your frame rate. So, you know, there are some things they need to tweak, but it has simple controls. It's easy to get into. But I think the best part of this, for me anyway, would be streaming it and chatting with other people who give input on, you know, what you're building, or independently creating war machines and then comparing and contrasting later on with other people who play. Some of the things that I wish that they would add in that they don't have, at least not, you know, to any great extent at this point, are like a tutorial that would help tip you off onto how to better your creations, not just like here's how to play, but like here's how to make it work right.
You're looking for medieval Clippy.
Yeah, you need Clippy.
Oh, so, it looks like you're trying to. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also like an adjustable camera, or like a slow, like there is a swivel camera, but I mean, like, I want to have a camera able to be positioned in different places, and then like a slow-mo replay would be really fun. And somebody else had mentioned in one of the reviews about a map editor, and that would be pretty cool too. So, but it's still a fun game. If you just like to, you know, create things of destruction and burn villages and stuff, like, have fun. There's a thing for that.
So. It's also fairly inexpensive too.
Yeah. I waited for a sale, of course, but you know, it's a thing. So that's another one. Another one I've been playing is Impossible Draw. It is an iOS reflex game where you have to draw symbols to unlock a path through an endless data grid. They appear in front of you as roadblocks, and you need to draw them really quickly and accurately in order to unlock them and progress.
Would you call this an endless drawer?
Yes, it is an endless drawer.
Can I quote you for that?
Sure.
Turns out I am the designer of Impossible Draw.
And like, you can unlock different types of music, different themes, different visual elements, like a different type of glow and stuff for your drawing tool or what have you. But you can unlock everything other than getting rid of the ads by just playing the game. To get rid of the ads, you have to pay 99 cents, but it's otherwise free. The visuals are really crisp and smooth, shiny and simple 3D, you know, with really bright colors and stuff. So quite up my alley.
Is it just recreate the symbol by hook or by crook? Like, or is there, you know, intuit like the quickest way to draw this exactly?
Is there
you need to make the top stroke first and then do the circle and then.
Well, I don't think like the symbols vary enough that I don't think necessarily there's like a tactic for the best way to draw it, because everybody forms their letters differently when they write on paper, and so they would draw differently. But it does judge on your accuracy. Like, if you don't get it looking anything like the thing, you have like a really, really quick, you better redraw that thing very fast, you know, few seconds to try again and to get it right with the symbol right in front of you. But it's not very long, so it really becomes a major dexterity quiz, mm-hmm. you know, just to see if you are dexterous enough to replicate this thing accurately, you know. So still, like, it's a fun thing to play every once in a while when I have a few minutes and I don't want to get into you know, like a puzzle juice round, which goes on forever and ever, because I never finish. I don't die in that game. I just keep going. So that's fun.
Neat.
And the last one is Horror Escape. It's a room escape. The first 9 levels are free on iOS, but you don't really need to pay for the rest of them, because there are a million variants of this room escape out there on iOS App Store. So, like, the same developer, Trapped, you can, you know, just search that or search for Room Escape and you'll find 50 million. I've also played Paranormal Escape, Psycho Escape, Doomsday Escape, Hellgate Escape. You would think some of these would be, like, redundant, you know, but whatever. They are all individual. I still have, like, 5 or 6 more to go before I run out of them.
It's always, like, dismaying is the wrong word, but it's kind of the one that comes to mind. It's a little bit dismaying when you see a genre be commodified like that. Like,
Yeah, and so some of them are better than others. I would say that Horror Escape is one of the better ones. Some of the other ones you can tell were some of their earlier apps. But even if you get stuck in the game, like if you just can't figure out what you need to do next, they actually have walkthrough videos that you can watch by just, you know, waiting for an ad to end, and then you can see the walkthrough video and it'll show you whatever you need to do. It's just like a time killer thing to do in between things. Like if you're stuck in a line somewhere, hey, why not pull up a room escape and, you know, play a level?
Yeah.
So that's it. Those are things I played.
Can you give an example of like the kind of puzzle you would see in Horror Escape?
Oh, some of them are really ridiculous. Like, you know, you have to, in order to get this key, you have to find a code, and the code is spread out throughout the room in these different parts, but you have to solve like a visual puzzle on the wall by rearranging parts, and then, you know, break this piece of glass over here with this other tool that you find somewhere else in the room, and then it falls and shows you one of the numbers, you know, that kind of thing, where it's just like you just have to go around and mess with everything and combine things, and eventually you can figure it out. Some of them are harder than others, and I want to say that Horror Escape itself is probably the more complicated or complex one when it comes to the types of puzzles that are in it. Some of the other ones are just ridiculous, you know, just completely stupid. So, you know, but, you know, it's a good, you know, quick time killer for 5 minutes while you're sitting in a line at a post office or whatever. So,
which I do a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of mailing.
gotta do it, you know?
Yep. So that's all.
Ben, how about you?
So I think I have just one. I beat Firewatch over the week.
Can we tag team it, because I beat Firewatch yesterday.
How do you feel about doing a spoiler cast of it? Maybe. I don't know.
I feel pretty good about doing a spoiler cast. We would need to schedule it. Yes, we would probably need to schedule it. I don't know that I could do it tonight. I would definitely like to talk about the game's merits right now. Okay. Like, talk about what it does well. I think we can do that without kind of going into specifics of what happens, because there's a lot of this that you can kind of extrapolate from the premise of it. You know, you're out here in the wilderness, semi alone, talking with one person, and things happen, and you just wonder where somebody's mind will go during that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's plenty aesthetically and play wise we can hit too.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that this game does well is the style of it is really nice. It's the first game that I've played that I feel like I'm camping in, or that gives an accurate depiction of that. I don't know. Okay. Overall, out of 5 stars, how many stars would you give it, Cole?
I get 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about where I would be at. Maybe 3 or 4, maybe. It's good. It's fine. The style's good. I had some beef with the narrative. Parts of it I really liked. Parts of it I thought were kind of unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's
full of red herrings, right? And depending on what you like to see in a piece of fiction, you might be disappointed that some of those red herrings don't pan out.
I do feel that every game that has come out recently feels like it needs to be Portal in a sense, where it's something sinister is going on that you're not aware of. Mm-hmm. And that's the narrative thrust of the game.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe some of that was going on here.
I can see how that plays. I can draw a, I could say a thesis statement about why those fake outs work, on a thematic level. They satisfied me that they didn't ultimately go where they led, where you thought they were going to, just because of kind of what it ultimately ends up being. And you can read that into the way it begins too, right? Just certain things about the way life is and the stories we like to tell ourselves, all kind of play in the stories we tell ourselves and the stories we tell each other, right? I think that is a pretty strong theme, but I don't know, it could be a fake out if you want, if the game steers away from a direction you were really excited to see it go.
Well, it's not that I was excited to see it go in a certain direction. It just seems like it was committed in one direction and maybe didn't pay off in that direction. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What'd you think of the dialogue?
So I will say the opening of the game I thought was amazing.
The Twine Adventure.
But total gut punch, but also good.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I missed it. And also I was really happy with how that tutorialized. I didn't even realize that was a tutorial. When I had you picking up the backpack and getting in the truck and all that. But by the time you go through that, you know how to get around the forest. So the beginning was strong. You liked that.
Mm-hmm. And the map was interesting. The idea of navigating hiking trails. Mm-hmm. It is kind of interesting though how compact it is. I feel like you can walk from one end of the map to the other in about 3 to 5 minutes maybe. Right.
Yeah. Especially if you know the shortcuts. There are lots of steep drops you can take going in most directions. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting, because when you're first exploring the game, it feels like it's a big open world, but then kind of after you've kind of discovered everything, it does seem kind of small, which is kind of at odds with the setting where it's supposed to be a very expansive sort of setting.
But it's you can see how that is just your quadrant. This isn't all of Shoshone. This is the part of it that you have jurisdiction over.
Sure, sure.
And also knowledge compresses space too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought about that too. Like, wow, it's kind of weird how it's having me cross the map over and over again, but like each time it like lends into that familiarity, which isn't to say that like I really enjoy feeling lost in this game. I'm terrible at navigating 3D spaces, but the fact that like the play in this game, aside from navigating, you know, a lot of the dialogue and stuff, is paying attention and going through this orienteering kind of thing. Like the fact that, yes, you have a map that shows you your location and roughly where you've been with a dotted line, but there, you know, it's mostly just a compass and looking to find the trail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the dialogue system of the game? Did you?
I liked it. I didn't like the way I had to control it.
Okay.
Just I was playing it on a Steam controller, and I imagine it'd be the same on like a regular gamepad, which is you have to go for the D-pad. So you have to hold the left trigger to mimic holding down the button on the walkie-talkie, and then you have to use the D-pad to go up and down through the options, right? Which, okay, it felt more precise than like playing The Walking Dead and scrolling up and down with the mouse wheel.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the dialogue system because it felt subtle in a way that like a bunch of these other kind of conversation-driven games don't. The things that it remembered and the things that it kind of like led to, you know, even going down to what I reported and what I didn't, that all felt very kind of like satisfying and kind of like natural in a way that like something that obviously has like branches would feel a little bit forced or artificial, right? Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. Like they kind of leaned into like, yeah, you're not going to decide if somebody lives or dies. Like it's going to be a little bit, it's going to be small. And I loved how small that system ultimately ended up being, you know, in terms of theme, you know, How about you? How did that react?
Yeah, no, I had the same reaction where I thought it was interesting that the kind of choices that you were making weren't governing any sort of like large effect. It was very interpersonal sort of decisions, you know. Mm-hmm. Basically, a lot of it, your decisions were determining how you were presenting yourself to the other person.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
What did you think of the dialogue itself?
What do you mean?
That is a leading question because I have an opinion about it and I wanted to hear yours before I gave mine. Okay. But I like it. It is incredibly stylized. I feel a little bit like Delilah and what's his name, Henry, have the same voice a little bit. You know, like Henry's a little bit, you know, especially early on, most of the options have him withholding a little bit more, you know, he's not as vulnerable, but once they kind of start going back and forth, they both have kind of a similar like reference pool and a similar rhythm. It almost felt like,
which is snarky.
Yeah. Which is fine. Like I will totally go in for some stylized snark. And like, there were some awesome, like little couplets, you know, like call and response kind of things, you know, or like situations where they were like playing around with each other and flirting in these really kind of oblique ways. But the thing is, it's hard for me to separate that actually from having listened to hundreds of hours of Jake Rodkin and Sean Vanneman talking on Idle Thumbs. So even though you have like one of the guys from Mad Men and that amazing actress who played Delilah, whose name I can't recall, I'm sorry, you know, delivering these lines, it still feels very much in their voice. Okay. And that is probably a heap and helping of my problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How did it work for you, I guess, like on the snarkiness front or on the quickness front?
Well, the only thing that I noticed is for me, there was a few sense of like believability issues where, you know, like, is it realistic that two people would like open up that much or like start, you know, like being as forthcoming with information as they were in the game?
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of hard to imagine yourself in that situation as well. So you kind of don't know how you would react in that situation. So that was kind of the only beef I had with it is I wasn't 100% on board of two people developing a relationship that quickly in that situation, but I don't know. Yeah.
I'm excited to go in and look and see kind of the different ways that this will like that the game branches like internally, like this is like intra beat branching. But I understand that the game can end in different ways, right? Like there are going to be subtle differences there. I want to find out how it articulates specifically because of how much they keep track of stuff. I feel bad that I didn't take advantage of the camera mechanic.
What's the camera? Oh, okay. Ooh. Yeah.
Just throughout the course of the game, you find a disposable camera, and you can take pictures of like cool sights that you find. Like I took a picture of a cool turtle I found, or like here's a sunset, or here's some light blowing through, or going through some smoke, but I didn't kill the roll. And they have this system where you can send off and get those photos printed. Mm-hmm. And like, I kind of want to do that to get my feely before that service shuts down.
So here's my question.
Okay.
Is there any in-game incentive for you to do that? Second off, can you, since it's a disposable camera, can you actually see what you took pictures of before you have it developed?
The way that articulates is super cool. And I kind of don't want to say what ultimately happens with them, but like, you do not have ready access to them after you take them. Like it's just like a fun saver.
Took pictures of all the notes that Henry made.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
nice. Yeah. His wall of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
His John Nash tribute.
Oh gosh, it's a beautiful game though. Like I don't know what setting my PC was on when I played it, but like it is majestic.
Was that a beautiful mind like segue / pun?
Maybe.
Because that was half-sies. pretty on top of things.
You know, we always like to underline those when they happen.
So I will say that I thought it was very beautiful, the setting. But it was hard for me to not compare it to The Witness, since that's so close to memory.
So fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like they both have that similar style of you kind of wandering by yourself. Mm-hmm. They're very different games, of course, but
I don't really, like, I look at The Witness, and for as kind of broad as some of the like physical landscape features are, like I got them confused just there. I think the Firewatch is definitely more stylized because like every day has different filters over it, like, or different shaders, like the different qualities of light or different times of day that you go out. So like, I really loved seeing the different ways that, the different character that that this relatively small area would take on just because of like atmospheric conditions.
Yeah, Firewatch is kind of like impressionistic nature, and The Witness is kind of like abstract nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dig it. Like, I recommend people play it because, A, it is very self-contained and not very, not very long. And B, because, I think that there's something worthwhile there, like, in the cracks when we're not talking about the actual, substance of what goes on. Like, this is, like, just systemically, it is really cool to walk around in this world.
I would say, however, I would say I would wait until it goes to like $10 before I would purchase it.
Yeah.
If I were listening.
Yeah. Okay. You're saying that just because you know that it eventually will, and probably relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could also see this one going on like a bundle or something. So, just depends on how much you can wait to play it. So, yeah. Cool. Did you have anything else, Ben?
I think that's it. I did a little bit of Rocket League, and I did a little bit of Left 4 Dead 2 with Jala, but that's about it. Just small multiplayer things.
Yeah, cool. That was a thing that happened.
did either you, Dennis, or you, Jala, have any questions about Firewatch?
No,
I don't want to ask too many because I want to refresh myself.
Yeah, I think it'll run on your computer, Dennis.
Yay! / I hate you.
You're just trying to rile him back up again.
You can't show me weakness. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I had just one game that I played new this week. We had friends in town, and one of the nights just got like stupid drunk with them at our place. So that was a fun time. But it's like late night, and both the girls had fallen asleep, and I'm just kind of hanging out with this guy, and we were like, let's play a video game. I haven't tried this one yet, and it's a game called Chariot, which is a co-op platformer. where you are two people who are pulling a king's burial shroud, I don't know what to call it, in a chariot to his final resting place. And you kind of get to the entrance to like the you know, cave of kings or whatever, and you're ready to drop him off. And he's like, whoa, 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 this is not nearly good enough. Or rather, his ghost is like, whoa, 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 this is not nearly good enough. Like, you need to pull me down deep into these caves, right? So the entire game is about you trying to navigate this kind of unwieldy cart through levels, and kind of pull it along with you to get it to the exit each time. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very physics-based. You can at any point grappling hook onto one of the wheels of the cart, and your co-op partner can grappling hook onto the other wheel, and then you basically can, you know, raise or lower yourself on the rope, or let out more rope, or pull it in, which can be either used to help you climb or, you know, pull the cart somewhere, based on kind of a varying set of circumstances. So again, keep in mind, when we played this, we were both just smashed, like barely functioning smashed, and it was a surprising amount of fun that way, although I think most games are. We only got through the first couple of levels, but every time, you know, there's kind of like the main level, and then there's that one side area that's like the really difficult puzzle that you're supposed to kind of come back to and figure out.
Yeah, it's the third star.
Yeah, it's exactly the third star. And we stopped and just like focused on those every time we found them, which was interesting, especially because we were so unfamiliar with the game. We had just started playing it, and it was a lot of fun. It took a lot of teamwork and communication, which the best couch co-op games do. You know, so many times, like even with Diablo 3, which is really fun couch co-op, you can just kind of play that in silence next to each other. you both have your thing and you know your thing, and you don't really need to communicate that much. But with this one, you're like actively talking each other through, okay, here's what I think we need to do. And then like, okay, I'm going to let out some rope, so then now you can jump, and now you got to pull that back in, but wait until I'm kind of locked onto the ground here. And like, so it succeeded in that it was like, it forced us to do a lot of communicating, which again, because we were smashed, was more like, oh, I'm on the thingy. The thingy is good now. Oh, you missed. Okay, hold on. I'm coming down to get you.
I'm gonna go over here.
Yeah. So that was entertaining. The one complaint I have is in those areas, usually it's the object that the way you pick up objects is you have to get the cart close enough to them, so you yourself can't pick up any of the stuff lying around. You have to get the cart close to it, and then it kind of like, you know, gets sucked into this burial cart, which is funny because essentially you're like carting a medieval hearse around these levels if you focus on it too much, but if it gets close enough to the item you're trying to get, the item will start to kind of like shake. Just like, oh, you're almost there. And then we thought you had to get it a little bit closer after that, and you know, that would trigger it actually getting to the cart. In reality, if you get it to the point where it's close enough that the object that you're trying to pick up is shaking, and then just hold it there, after 5 or so seconds, it'll move and go to the cart. Which for these challenge areas, that's like as close as you can get it. So we wasted all this time thinking like, okay, we're almost there. Now we need to do something really extreme to get it a little bit closer. When really what we need to do is just hold still for a couple seconds to solve it. So that added a significant amount of time and unnecessary experimentation to a puzzle that could have otherwise been solved much easier.
Yeah.
But other than explaining that piece of it a little bit better, it was really fun.
How would this game work in single player?
I don't know that it would. Because the challenge sections are explicitly marked with like a two-player symbol. So I think the way they might do it is just like the base level you could muddle your way through with one player. But any of the challenge stuff you would need two players for. I don't think it gives you an AI counterpart.
Is this Steam or like what is this? Where did
this,
you end
this
up
was on PlayStation? It was actually a PlayStation Plus game.
Oh yeah, I've stopped downloading any of them if they didn't stick out to me. Actually,
you just hit the button because you don't actually.
I know, but still, that is a lot of hassle.
You get that hat and you wind up missing Persona 3. Okay, that's all.
Okay, but I would know Persona.
Oh, all right, well. Can I put in a brief aside?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, Steam is so much better than PlayStation Online, I feel like, because it's free multiplayer. You just pay for the games.
Well, yeah.
Of course. But I just, for as asinine as Steam's interface is, like, I cannot make heads or tails of any of the online sections of PSN, either web, Vita, or PS4, or PS3 for that matter. Like, it's all very, very poorly optimized and also very kind of like confusing. Like, I'm not sure what information they want me to be able to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you think, well, I was going to say, you think they could get something that simple right, but I think it's proving that is, you know, that kind of structure is really not as simple as you would think it is.
No, and I'm not saying I could do it better, but I just know, where there's friction. Like, there's enough friction there that I just, they're like, I don't want to go get free stuff.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like, it's,
honestly, I wind up just Googling PSN store once a month and doing it through the website. But even that, like, it's kind of buried.
Yeah. No, like, what I want is... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I completely agree with you guys, but on the flip side, the one thing I do really like about it is the predictive text when you're searching. So that, like, you know, like, when you search three or four letters, it narrows down what the possibilities, what you can search for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It is, like, not completely bereft of elegance.
it's still like a dumpster fire to use. I just, like, what I want is when I sign into a, like, to a system, you know, is like to get a message or to get like a bloop that says, hey, these free games you paid for, go here to get them, or press this button to claim all of them. Like, the way that they have it set up now is, it feels like it is designed primarily to deny you the ability to get the things that you need. Like, it is seven layers deep on any of the interfaces to go get the free games that you want to get. And, like, I understand how ridiculous this is. Like, I know I sound like a whiny baby, but, like, you want to make this a good experience.
Yeah, you're paying, and before PlayStation 4, it was even more so that you were paying probably specifically to get access to these free games, because on PS3 it was, you know, it was free online. And so, you know, if that's what you're selling us on, you should make that easy to take advantage of.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's neither here nor there. It's a couple extra seconds to my life in the grand scheme of things. So
But you came away with positive, or at least neutral.
Yeah. So I played. I played. It was like the first three levels. There's some, like, in between crafting system that we were too drunk to understand.
Yeah.
So we just ignored it. I don't know if I'll wind up going back and visiting it with Jen, but it was like the perfect distraction for us on that night. So it was, you know, right game, right place, right time.
Nice.
Other than that, I played a little more League of Legends. I'm at the point where I am just good enough to understand how terrible I am at the game, but not good enough to do anything about it yet. So it's a very frustrating place to be.
Do you still have people who are willing to, like, help you out?
Yeah. Still have the friend who got me into it that I play with when I can. And mostly that's taken the form of us just talking a lot about the game. It's interesting. I've, you know, tried a couple extra champions from the one that I started with, and the amount of bravery it takes to start that first game with a completely new champion is incredible. It's just the most terrifying thing that, you know, cause your team is relying on you. That's the thing is one player, good or bad, on a five player team just makes such a huge impact. So to waddle into a game being like, I got my training wheels on this new character, I had no idea how it works. Hi, everyone.
I fell off the back of the turnip truck. What do y'all call turnips around these parts? Do you call them bitter roots or what? Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, you know, okay, which one is my E button and which one is my W button again? Did I do that?
Yeah. So
I like how he turned into Urkel.
Last minute dive into Urkelville.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah. So it's just, it's terrifying to go in and be like, I don't want to be. I'm competitive. I want to win. I want to help. I'm an approval seeker, so I want people to like me. Mm-hmm. And I know going into this game, I'm signing up the first time I play this champion to do none of that, to be horrible and to be confused and to have to apologize to people. And it's just, you know, but that's you've got to if you want to experience more of the game. So it's a harrowing experience. Oh, go ahead.
Something that I know that Riot does is they create videos that kind of walk through the different movesets and, you know, that kind of show you like, hey, in this situation, this champion will do this and this and this. And it's like it serves as a basic like primer in lieu of a tutorial.
Yeah, I know in the launcher they've got many videos that just show the character's powers, but I don't think they have those videos that actually kind of walk you through strategy. You probably have to go to YouTube or something for that.
Yeah.
But you know, I do all that. I look up the tutorial videos and you read the guide but you know, there's just that's not the same as actually stepping into the arena, which is intimidating. And then the number of times that you die looking at your keyboard trying to figure out what is where and, you know, is hard that first time. But if you can pull through, the heroes really do feel and play incredibly differently. And of course they do, because that's the bread and butter of this game.
Right.
And that is a sufficient reward to get you to take that terrifying step.
Yeah.
And that's me.
Okay.
Yeah, any question on either of those games?
No, it's been cool seeing people in the Slack like encourage you through this journey.
Yeah. Which I would always love more people to play with. I haven't checked our co-op like hit list recently. I don't know if we have Riot names on there. But I always take people to play with because I definitely do better than when I'm playing with randos. So I don't know if that just means I'm the one bringing everyone else down since they're the ones bringing me up. But I will take that for now as I learn.
Nice. Cool. Well, do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now it is time for the credits. I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
And just by way for anyone who's new and has listened to this point, the credits are a time where we kind of
we should over explain the things that we don't typically explain.
Yes, I've been D Furia, Dennis Furia. I screwed that up so bad.
Yeah. Oh, the D stands for Dennis.
Huh. I am Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter. Said in whatever tense that Cole said it.
I don't care what tense it is. And you know where we're all talking about. Everybody's saying Twitter. I don't need to say that again. So I am just Jolichon in places.
I am Merkelizer in places.
I like how angry this is. Yeah.
You guys are angry. I'm not angry. I've got no vim and vinegar and whatever.
stick around for whatever. Vinegar. Stick around for whatever. all right, does anybody have a title they want to throw in?
Blood dollars. You said blood dollars. Yes, blood dollars. Oculus Lift and ex-consultant.
Ex-consultant.
Ex-consultant. Yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I've started writing down a ridiculous number of these since I've actually like I would always tell myself during the episode, like, oh, that was so funny. I'll remember it no matter what. I don't have to. And now I've started actually writing it down because I always forget. But that means I have a ridiculous number of them now.
Okay.
So my far and away favorite is Open Face Knuckle Sandwich.
Okay.
I've got Cash Grab and Money Runners. Quap Souls. I can't even say it right. Ex-Consultant.
Ex-Consultant.
With X-C-O-M all in caps and then S-U-L-T-A-N-T.
What was the Souls one? I'm sorry.
Quop Souls. Q-W-O-P. Yeah.
That was your joke, Cole.
Okay.
Yes. Dumpy Ass Gumby Crotch.
I had that one as well.
And then Needs More Wolf Junk.
that one as well.
I want to emphasize that far and away my favorite is Open Face Knuckle Sandwich.
Yeah, I had Open Face Knuckle Sandwich and Needs More Wolf Junk, and also XCOM Sultans. Ben, how
I had
about
all
you?
That. I had Hype Hopper, in case that one wasn't added.
The Hype Hopper. Yeah.
Okay.
And I had the other three were already mentioned: XCOM Sultan, WS Gumby Crotch, and Needs More Wolf Junk.
I had mod open 139, comma 138 close.
Okay.
Which is an Excel joke. for mod 139, I had to look. I couldn't remember how the mod function worked. I had Open Face Knuckle Sandwich, XCOM Sultan, Needs More Wolf Junk, and squeaking in right at the end, Dive into Urkelville. Huh, we got a lot. This is probably the most titles.
I started tracking it. It's going to jack us up by like double.
By about 25%. So the ones that stuck out are Needs More Wolf Junk and XCOM Sultant.
And Open Face Knuckle Sandwich.
Okay. So Dennis, you have cast your vote. I am a fan of Needs More Wolf Junk.
Yeah, I like that one too.
It does have a ring to it.
Yeah. I worry.
I'm fine with any of them.
I worry about XCOM Sultant because that works better in audio.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. So let's leave that one as a nice surprise and just go with Needs More Wolf Junk.
Yay!
Sounds good.
Okay.
How can you argue against Wolf Junk?
Oh, I'm excited. My downstairs neighbor moved out, the door's unlocked. So I think I'm going to go downstairs and walk around his apartment to go take a look at it because I'm curious.
That's so creepy.
I know, right? I've never been in there.
That's I thought you were going to say like now I can play DDR.
Yeah, I'm gonna play DDR. Gonna play some Rock Band, you know, it's no problem. Yeah. No, I'm gonna go down there and walk around and see what it looks like.
You need to blare "This Is Where We Used to Live" as loud as humanly possible.
Is that the Mountain Goat song?
Broken into the old apartment.
Oh no, I was thinking of Genesis 3:23, the Mountain Goat song.
Oh no,
you need to take pictures of yourself in areas that probably won't be decorated by the next person, and then periodically send those pictures to the person when they move in.
Hey, you should pay more attention.
Oh no.
Yeah. All right, good
and
night
that's
everybody.
When you find the bodies.
Yeah. Oh, I've got to have my bodies down there so I can pin it on them.
Oh god.
All right, good night everybody.
Yeah, good night.
Right. Thank you so much. Thanks, have a good guys. Week
yeah you
have
guys a good week.
Yeah.
Bye. See ya.